This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
Back in 2017, three Black trans women founded the Compton's Transgender Cultural District in San Francisco, now more commonly known as the Transgender District. Its original name pulls upon the history of the first documented uprising of transgender and queer people in the country, the Compton's Cafeteria Riots of 1966. Of course, the history of trans people in the Bay Area, in particular in San Francisco, runs deep. So much so that in 2021, advocates within the Transgender District got the month of August to be recognized as Transgender History Month in the city and county of San Francisco. And then California took that a step further last year when the state assembly voted in favor of making Transgender History Month a statewide designation. The first full state recognized Transgender History Month is the August we are in right now. Welcome to KCBS In-Depth, broadcasting throughout the Bay Area and streaming on the Odyssey app. I'm Mary Hughes. This moment in time was marked at the start of the month by longtime San Francisco trans activist Honey Mahogany.
We celebrate the fact that trans people are here, that they've always been here, that they will continue to be here, here in the state of California and across the world. We have a rich legacy and history that predates Stonewall. We can trace it back to the Compton's Cafeteria Riots or the Cooper's Donuts Riots or so many incredible pieces of our history that aren't talked about enough. And that's why we are here to educate people, to provide information, to let people know who the trans community is, who we are, what we stand for, and what we have contributed to this country.
And the legacy of trans people is what Andrea Horn is focused on. And she's this week's guest on In Depth. Horn is a former actress, model, jazz singer.
I'm a little black bird looking for a bluebird.
She's been a fixture in the trans community of San Francisco for over 40 years, working to support the Black and brown transgender women in the Tenderloin. Anne Horn is a keeper of stories, of the histories of trans women of color that might otherwise be lost. Now she's turning her research into a book that she's calling How Black Trans Women Changed the World. Andrea Horn, thank you so much for joining me on In Depth.
You're welcome.
So I've been digging into a little bit of your own life story and, of course, everything you've done up to this point. But I kind of want to start at the beginning. What brought you to the San Francisco area initially?
It was friends, really. I was following friends that I thought were cool. And I was a teenage runaway, so it made it a lot easier to do as I chose. But I was friends with Sylvester. He's kind of a famous San Francisco icon from the disco era.
Oh, yeah.
And I was friends with Sylvester from Los Angeles. He's originally from Los Angeles, as am I. And I had another friend who's also a San Francisco icon named Alonzo King. And he has a dance company. And so they were both here. And I kept coming to visit. How I eventually stayed is I was trying to be a model girl at that time. And I got a modeling job on an album cover. And I was hired to sort of go on tour and sort of speak for the band. And the tour kept getting postponed. My friends were getting tired of me couch surfing. So I had to get my own place. And, you know, once you get your own place, you're kind of settled, right? And so I had a good apartment. Actually, I got a little lucked into a little condo. And so San Francisco became my residence. And when I first moved to San Francisco, I got my first apartment in my name in 1979. I was a teenager. Yeah, and the reason, other than my friends being here, one of the other reasons that I chose to stay in San Francisco was because of all the arts stuff, artworks that were going on every day. Almost every neighborhood, every block, there was a little dance studio. There were plays going on. There were workshops of plays. There were little jazz clubs. There were little places where people could workshop their acts, especially in the Mission and Tenderloin area. And it was just a lovely kind of magical place to be. Aside from all the queerness, it was the arts stuff that really drew me into San Francisco and made me want to stay.
What have you seen change over time when it comes to San Francisco and the experience there?
When the tech folks came, all that disappeared. All the art stuff just went away. It just went away in the old movie house. You know, was turned into apartment buildings for little rich white kids. And it's like, what happened to the little dance studio over here? You know, it's not now a Nike store. And so I know that's progress, but it did change the tone of San Francisco. But here, this last year, I've seen the arts coming back to San Francisco. And it makes me so happy. And I'm glad I didn't run when the tech people came, but I stuck it through because I did a little art show last week. And, you know, free tickets to go see Chaka Khan this weekend. And, you know, San Francisco's back. The artsy part is back. And I mean no disrespect, but people did not come to San Francisco to see Sanjay with a MacBook and Terry Sperry Topsiders. You know, they came to see the artists and the wild people and the arts and the architecture.
Well, no, I think that touches on a few things that I wanted to get into with you as well. As someone who came to the Bay Area from North Carolina, my knowledge of San Francisco was it's this epic, you know, queer scene. It's where all the cool bands go to play. It's where all the shows happen. And when I arrived, a lot of people that I'm friends with were like, oh, well, this place is shut down. Well, this place is closed and this place is no longer there. And so it was a shift for me, even in a more recent time, to hear that things had been different. And of course, you've kind of been able to see those changes from when you came here very young to where you are now. And on the topic of this being, you know, we think of the Bay Area as a very progressive place, but San Francisco in particular as a haven, you know, for the queer community. Mm-hmm. Is that something that has always been the case from your perspective or not?
My perspective is I have had so much privilege in life, never money privilege, but hey, what I had was better than money. You know, I had beauty and youth and I had smarts and I had the most important thing in the trans world, and that's passability. And so from a personal perspective, I didn't need San Francisco to be a queer haven because I personally could go anywhere, right? And that's new. That's unique to the trope that's out there. But I grew up with a whole bunch of women just like me, but their stories don't get told. You know, Caitlyn Jenner's story gets told. For the trans community, since it's still Trans History Month, right? There's a sort of gap in the information where Caitlyn Jenner is sort of the example of a trans woman. They hire the Caitlyn Jenners who come from a whole nother place to kind of oversee the girls like me that transitioned when we were teenagers, as opposed to old men. So that's why I started doing this work, because I saw that the girls like me, the early transitioners, and the ones without access to resources are the ones who always end up dead on TV. And the Caitlyn Jenners drive off in their nice cars. And even today, in a butch girl at college, if she's the captain of the softball team, it's all high fives. And she can have a girlfriend even. But it's the exact opposite of Femi, practically a girl, boy on a college campus, is still going to be problematic today. And so, therefore, the BIPOC trans girls just kind of get left behind. And that's the sort of work that I'm doing, because when you know the truth of the story, no one can bamboozle you. And so it is the BIPOC trans women who have led the way, who have thrown the first brick at Stonewall. And so that's what happened to me. And so that's what inspires me to keep working for the community.
For those who aren't as familiar with you, you know, you've had a lot of careers. You kind of mentioned you model, actress, singer, but some of your biggest work is working with the community and to gather the stories and the history, to open up the history of trans people to the world. Can you tell me a little bit more about that work that you're doing?
Oh, I'd love to. Well, I've always been an avid reader. I would say I hated school and educated myself. I started going to college when I was 30, but 30 years prior to that, I read a book a week, and I ran across this story of this Black trans woman in New York called Mary Jones. I even kind of whispered to me. I was whispering on the phone, like I didn't want someone to come and take it, the information from me. I was, you don't know how representation matters, how much representation matters until you realize you don't have it. And that meant so much to me. And my friend said, I bet there's more. And I said, no, there couldn't be. But there was more. As a matter of fact, that was more than I counted on finding, and I had to kind of slow down because I didn't have the bandwidth for an encyclopedia. One of the interesting things I learned is that the West, or the Old West, as we call it, go West, young man. So the West was a place for reinvention, and people came to the West to reinvent themselves. And farm boys from Maine became saloon girls in San Francisco. Tomboys back in North Carolina started riding for the Pony Express, and other sort of gender variant folks like Stagecoach Mary. Yeah, she was like the baddest hombre during the Pony Express. Nobody messed with Stagecoach Mary. So, but the West allowed her to get her life, as we say. And because representation matters, it's imperative that trans kids coming up today know their history. No one else is going to tell them.
In Depth will return after a moment.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Anytime I get into conversations about queer experiences and what that looks like now for people, I do feel that there's a great amount of importance to the acknowledgement of who came before and what came before. And to your point, that there's power in knowing the history of that, who fought for the rights and spaces before you. And you've mentioned some very fascinating stories already, some fascinating elements to the past. Is there a particular story that you have found that has been the most fascinating to you of a trans person in the past that you thought, I didn't even know that that story would exist until
now?
Well,
I think one of the ones that cracks me up the most is Madame Petrini. And Madame Petrini was an opera singer, soprano, trans woman. You know her? You know who she is?
A little familiar, but not a lot.
Yeah. She was an opera singer in the old ways in the Iowa, Utah, Washington area. And she was the son of Brigham Young. Yes, you can Google her right now. She's got a Wikipedia page. Madame Petrini. Oh, another fascinating tale is Mrs. Nash. And Mrs. Nash was Black and Mexican, trans woman, and she ended up being the laundress for General George Custer. Who knew? And she followed him and his family around for years. So that was Mrs. Nash. And when Custer died, and so her story would never get told unless someone like me tells it. And I'm just scratching the surface to inspire the younger generation to dig deeper. I found a Black trans woman, as far back as 1550. That's 500 years ago. So she must have been remarkable that we are still talking about her 500 years later. And her name was Vitória. And she was in Lisbon, Portugal. And the only reason we know about her is because She was brought before the Portuguese Inquisition because the priest accused her of being a witch because she always had so many men hanging around her house waiting to get in to see her. And you know, those old priests were probably just jealous. They were just jealous. You know, they were jealous because she had all the men. But isn't that a remarkable story?
Well, that's fascinating. And it really, as someone who thinks about the history of the queer community quite a bit, and that was a huge part of my own self-learning and creation of who I am as a person as the years have gone by, is to know about the past. It does my heart good to know that there are bits and pieces that people like you can find and go, oh, wait a minute. Here's someone's story that hasn't been told before, or maybe not everyone knows about it, but someone thought to kind of hold on to this piece of information and it has found its way to you. You are in the process of gathering these stories for a book. Can you tell us a little bit about the book and where things stand right now?
Yeah, right now I'm sort of maybe beginning to look for an editor. As I mentioned a little earlier, I found more people to write about than I expected. I've had to like divide them off by centuries and decades and stuff like that. And I've sort of found that make it manageable in my mind. I'm focusing on three women, and I've written enough about them to be novellas. So I'm putting three novellas into one novel. Now, my interpretation of their stories, it's historical fiction. The dates and times and names and places are real, but we don't know how she thought. So one of the women I'm writing about, for example, her name is Lucy Hicks Anderson, which sounds like just an old money Daughters of the American Revolution sort of name, right? She has a Wikipedia page too. It says that she was a socialite, a gourmet chef, a bootlegger, and a madam, which is like just too fascinating. And she transitioned when she was 5 years old, 1890. And she told her family when she was 3 years old, don't call me Tobias. My name is Lucy. And they took her to the doctors, and the two doctors at two separate times in the early 1890s said, it's a phase. She'll probably outgrow it. Just let her call herself Lucy and let her wear dresses if she wants to. She'll outgrow it. But she never did. So she ended up being those things I mentioned, a chef, a socialite, and all this. And so a lovely white gay man was going to write about her life, and he called her the maid. It's like, well, that is just such not who she was. In fact, she probably had her own maids, but that's why I realized, oh, I need to set the record straight.
And I think you kind of mentioned that part of your role here in having these stories and in telling them is not, it's partially to put those stories out there, to remember those who came before who were living these lives. But it's also for the future and for the trans community now and the trans community to come. And in that respect, how do you feel about the transgender community, in particular in San Francisco? How do you feel about its future going forward? Are you feeling that things are changing and growing and evolving in a way that's good for them, and you're playing your part in that?
Well, I do think things are changing for the better, but I don't think these trans youths of today comprehend how important it is to know that they came from a people. Like, trans people didn't just pop up in the 21st century as they sort of have us believe. And I want trans kids in the future to be aware of their own history, that just because you get to skip down the street in hot pants and high heels, somebody got beat upside the head and went to jail and maybe killed so that you could have that freedom. And the way America teaches a history, we don't teach that part. And so these kids are skipping around in freedom, as they should, but they should also know who they owe their freedom to. And that's something we don't do in America. And that's something, because trans history has never been excavated. And I am just a spoon, you know, on the sand to get this ball rolling. But I am writing my stories from the perspective that only another Black trans woman could empathize with, and to know what it is to be live a stealth life, and the thoughts that go through your mind when you may be discovered as a trans woman. Not that someone couldn't imagine it, but, you know, to have the real experience and to be able to convey that and to put it into a book form that's interesting to read and educational, that's the work. And these women do haunt me, and they do stay into my thoughts. And if I forget about one for too long, they do something to my computer. And so I can't, it's like, I can't open that witness. I have to go back to where I was. It's weird how it happens, but their spirits want their stories told because they've been completely erased from human history. Like no gender variant person ever existed. And that's, I'm giving these girls some lives. And the working title of my book is How Black Trans Women Changed the World. And they did, in subtle ways. There would be no LGBT movement without Black and Afro-Latino trans women standing up to fight. And why are Black and brown, especially Black and Afro-Latino trans women, always sort of mentioned and highlighted but never really shown?
It sounds like they're working through you to get their stories out there. And what an amazing thing you're doing to carry that history on. And I want to thank you so much for sharing that with me and sharing that conversation. Find this episode and past episodes of In Depth online at kcbsradio.com. Just go to the podcast tab and look for In Depth. You can also hear In Depth episodes on the Odyssey app. Download the app on your smartphone and favorite KCBS Radio. Listening for KCBS and In Depth, I'm Mary Hughes.
Listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.